Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And we are here with a special guest, Val, who is here to talk about The Road to Jonestown, which is exactly what it sounds like. It is true crime.
And you read true crime kind of frequently, don't you?
I try to read true crime as often as I can. It's really dependent on the books, because a lot of them are not good, but there are quite a few hidden gems out there.
Okay.
Would you say this is one of the hidden gems?
Oh, this is absolutely one of the hidden gems. It was actually a recommendation off of a podcast I listened to, and I had to listen to it. They don't make recommendations without them being, you know, legitimate.
Was this last podcast on the left?
It was last podcast on the left, actually.
So tell us a little, I mean, clearly it's about Jonestown, but tell us a little bit about what the book covers and why this book in particular jumped out as a good true crime book to you.
Oh gosh, the book covers from the early days of Jim Jones as a child to all the way up until that fateful day in Guyana with the murder-suicide of Jim Jones himself and I think 909 of his followers.
Wow.
Whew.
Yeah, very crazy stuff. Very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
What do you learn about Jim Jones?
Oh, with Jim Jones, you kind of learn about like where he came from. His parents were kind of non-entities in his life. Specifically, his mom is described in the book as being difficult.
Okay.
And his dad was even more of a non-entity. He was in World War II and just had his lungs completely destroyed by mustard gas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he just kind of spent his time just kind of at the local pool hall and everything. It was a dry county, so he didn't drink or anything like that. But yes, his parents were just kind of not exactly there. So as such, Jim Jones would kind of just walk around on his own, you know, kind of waste a day, you know, just doing whatever he did. Until he met a Nazarene woman, very, very devout, a very devout churchgoer, and she started taking him to the church with her. And he was just absolutely, like, just enamored with the way that the preacher just grabbed everybody's attention and the power, and
so not necessarily the actual reason to go to church. He was just like, wow, this preacher's really good at getting people to listen.
So, see, that's the thing. Jim Jones was an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. He just found a vehicle for manipulation.
Yes, 100%. As a matter of fact, he considered Adolf Hitler and another gentleman named Father Divine, who was also another cult leader,
mm-hmm.
to be kind of his inspiration for the way that he did things. Not Hitler's beliefs, but just the way he spoke, you know, the way he carried himself.
The strategy of, like, enthralling the people.
Yes. I mean, there are books written on the thing, but I personally don't believe that cult leaders can be made. I think cult leaders are born.
Okay.
It's that high charisma.
It's a high charisma. But yeah, it also talks about how he met his wife, Marceline, who was a very devout Christian. He met her while he was working in a hospital, I believe. And she saw him and she liked the way that he was with the patients. He said that he was kind and, you know, all this and that. I don't know how much of that was an actual ruse or if there was a certain point where Jim Jones was actually good.
Okay.
Why she? That's.
I was going to ask if she ever had any indication that he was just playing a role.
Well, shortly after getting married, he went on a huge tirade about how he was an atheist and just really demeaning her, just giving her a hard time, and you know, saying how she worshipped the sky god in quotations and everything. You know, not exactly something good to hear whenever you're a devout Christian and
right.
You know, you just married this person.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly enough, though, I said earlier that I don't know if he was ever actually a good person. I do think he was at a certain point because they opened up People's Temple, and that's People's Temple, but People's didn't have the apostrophe because they were full on socialists.
Okay,
and they actually worked very, very hard to integrate Indianapolis, Indiana. If I remember correctly, I think they also had the first interracial adoption in the entire state.
Wow. Okay.
Have you read any other books about Jim Jones and Jonestown and all that?
I have not. The reason I read this one is because it's like, you know, 40 years later, as opposed to anything that gets written about an event like shortly after tends to be like just riddled with over exaggerations and just
biases to or against.
Yes.
Yeah. You get a little time to settle down when you wait 40 years to write about somebody.
Yes.
What kinds of firsthand accounts do you get in the story?
Oh, you get a lot of, well, later on, a lot of his followers, they become disgruntled as, well, just by the way things ended, you could see how people would be disgruntled. So
Yeah.
He had a lot of disgruntled followers and a lot of those are firsthand accounts. He does have a few surviving children as well.
Oh, wow.
That. Oof. Yes. Yeah, his son specifically, I think he was an account. I know he was interviewed for a documentary that I saw about, and the name of the documentary right now is completely escaping me. But yeah, definitely his son, his former lawyer. I don't remember his first name. Is something Stone. That one specifically is pretty crazy because he ends up having his wife stolen by Jim Jones.
Wow.
Yes. So he makes a powerful enemy when that happens. He even fathers a child with his wife.
So Jim Jones fathers a child with the other guy's wife.
Yeah, with Zori's wife, yes.
Was he like a polygamist? I don't actually know anything about him, so this is my first time to ever hear about him. So
Jim Jones wasn't a polygamist. I'd say he was an opportunist.
Okay.
Yeah. That's fair. How does this book stack up against other like true crime books that you've read about like significant people?
Significant people.
Like other books that are about one person as opposed to, you know, like a series of events or anything like that. Like how does it stack up research wise, reading wise, like how it's written?
It's written very well. Research wise, I mean, it's, yeah, they have a lot of firsthand accounts and, and, you know, and the like.
Okay.
Did his wife stick with him through all of it?
His wife was, I think, his wife was Marceline Jones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she stuck with him throughout it all, with the exception of one time when she tried to leave. At first, he threatened that she was going to go to hell, this and that, you know. But Marceline knew that he was an atheist, that he didn't believe in any of this. So when that didn't work, he just plain said, if you leave, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
To be honest, without Marceline, it would not have worked. Like, he wouldn't have ended up where everyone ended. He, at his worst, when he couldn't do anything, you know, she kind of held everything together. She was, like, the pillar of the entire thing. And without her, the entire thing would have crumbled. And, of course, she had no idea where it was going to end or anything like that. Mm-hmm. She was trying to do the best she could with what the situation was. You know, she's a great, great woman. Any and all accounts of her, they say just that she was a great, kind woman. And, you know, the entire thing was just unfortunate what happened.
What were some of the things that he was teaching? I know you said it was kind of a socialist commune, but
like, what were the tenets of his of his cult?
He's definitely disguising it in some sort of religious trappings, even though if the heart of it is not.
He uses Christianity a lot, is kind of the template, but one of the biggest things about it was that all men are created equal, and that was a message I got, I think, like 68 or 70% of the people with them, because roughly that amount were actually black.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Including the last one, including the ones in Jonestown with the murder-suicide. So that was a big one, was racial integration.
Okay.
And that, in my opinion, is probably what really moved things along, because he did this whole circuit thing to where he was doing the revivals, he was doing the healing and stuff, and he had a bunch of his followers help him set up those, the tents, yes, but also they helped them set up the grifts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they helped them set up the grifts. Yeah, and their entire thing was that, was, you know, I know this is wrong, but at the end of the day, you know, the ends justify the means. They're working for racial integration. They're working for...
So you think that a lot of people that were there, or like the firsthand accounts, is that they were willing to deal with some of the weird stuff because they felt that he was doing a better job at integrating like groups?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's real tricksy. I can imagine like in that time period, not that being unaccepted, so you're like, okay, I'll go where I can, and I guess this is where I can go.
What were the events leading up to the murder-suicide?
So by this point, Jim Jones had moved, I guess, his most ardent followers. Anyone that could move to Jonestown moved to Jonestown with him, and they moved into a part of Guyana, which is in South America. They moved there, and former members kind of made a coalition in California, because at first they were in Indiana, then they moved to California.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and a congressman named Leo Ryan was up for re-election, and it just so happened to coincide with the former members going public with like human rights violations and all this stuff, and at the time it was very, very big news.
Yeah.
So Leo Ryan decided to go on a fact-finding mission just to see exactly what is going on over there. And yeah, he goes over there, Jim Jones, like, finds out about it, of course, and he just organizes everything to where Congressman Leo Ryan is just 100% fooled by everything.
Dude.
Yeah, 100% fooled by everything. Nobody says a word about anything that's going on. I do believe someone does slip the congressman a paper asking for help to leave, but that was only one person.
Wow.
Yeah, no, that guy did get caught. They had the kids conditioned to just report anything, and as soon as he handed him the note, a kid pointed it out and said, hey, he passed him something. And with that, Leo Ryan, he offered anybody that wanted to leave could leave with him the following day.
Okay.
Well, that's not a good plan. Because you would have to say, like, people would know that you're about to leave, you know? Like,
yeah.
Well, he just said to show up with him whenever they're about to leave. He didn't say to, he didn't, like, point anybody out or anything.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, I do have to stress that he was completely fooled. Him and the entire group of people that he brought.
So he
with
was
him.
Just kind of like, I guess if someone wants to leave, I don't know why you would. It's fine here.
Okay.
So that happened, and I think 15 people showed up, something along the lines. 15 people showed up, you know, wanting to leave out of 909.
Yeah.
And Jim Jones just wasn't having it at all. He put a plant in the group of people that are leaving with just one objective: shoot Congressman Leo Ryan when you get the chance.
Dude.
So as they make it to the airstrip, Jim Jones sends, like, his guards to go, and they just start opening fire on them as they're trying to get into the plane, striking and killing a few of them, and they're able to make it into the plane, and that's when the guy ends up shooting the congressman before being apprehended.
Whew.
Yeah. Oh, as far as firsthand accounts, one of the guys that does the firsthand account is also one of the survivors from that shooting.
Okay.
From the airstrip shooting.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just a big, kind of a big grassy airstrip. It wasn't like concrete or anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the entire time, the Guyanese military are just there like, should we do something? And they're like, no, this is...
this is some crazy white people shit.
Yeah, because that's one of the reasons that they allowed Jim Jones to move there was that they wanted to put a buffer between them and, I think, Venezuela, because Guyana had just gotten their independence,
mm-hmm.
and they thought that a buffer of Americans,
a bunch of Americans, yeah,
and the other country would make them less likely to, you know, march over the border and have a coup.
Wow.
Did Jim Jones, like, while this was happening, was he also planning the murder-suicide with the larger group of people?
The murder-suicide had been in the works for
Oh, so it was already,
years.
Like, set.
He did a lot of dry runs.
He did a dry run of a murder-suicide.
He did, yes. At the beginning, it was just
like
a dry
sample
run.
Sample groups?
Excuse me?
Like, sample groups? Like, he just, like...
The sample group, which was his inner circle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he would do dry runs of murder-suicides very, very early on.
Wow. So that was really his end goal then.
It really was. I don't believe he had any intention of People's Temple continuing after he was gone.
Wow.
So would you recommend this to somebody? Do you think the book itself, like, obviously the situation is a very fraught one, I guess, but the book itself, would you recommend that to, like, just true crime lovers, or do you think other people could get some interesting information out of it as well?
Oh, wow. I would 110% recommend this. It is compelling, but then again, I'm very interested in this stuff to, you know, maybe a bit of a morbid degree, but I would argue that if anyone's interested in true crime at all, they should read it. Even if you're not, you know, you should just give this a try.
What are some other true crime books that you've read that you've enjoyed?
Let's see, Mindhunter is really, really good. It is what the Netflix series is based off of. Kind
oh,
of,
wow. Okay.
Yeah, kind of like the beginning of criminal profiling and everything. Very, very cool. It just focuses on building profiles for, on this occasion, killers.
Okay.
Yeah, and the guy helped catch a lot of people, including the person responsible for the Atlanta child murders. Gosh, what other one did he did? Peter Sutcliffe, who was an English serial killer that was known as a Yorkshire Ripper.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
He built a profile for him, and they're able to narrow it down. Yeah, very cool. Another one that I read was Dead Mountain, which is a lot of fun. It's about the Dyatlov Pass incident out in Russia. It's kind of...
Oh, I know about that incident where they were found, like, frozen to death, but it was, like, super weird.
Yes, yeah.
Some
yeah.
of them didn't have clothes, like weren't fully clothed for the outdoors. They all had radiation.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. That one. And is that one a similar, like, true crime, like, sort of... vibe to it, the Dead Mountain?
Dead Mountain is...
Because I know there's, I don't think there's like an official explanation, which is why I was wondering like how they work
still
that into.
Lots of theories there.
Yeah.
Well, fun enough, Russia recently reopened the case a few years ago.
Russia was just like, I guess we should figure this out.
I guess we should look into this. As far as that, it's good. Dead Mountain's good, but it's not really in the vein of Road to Jonestown. Is that it's more from one person's perspective in his quest to like fulfill his own need to exactly find out what happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which, of course, it never gets solved or any of that. It's still...
Very much up for debate.
Very, very much still up for debate.
But yes, true crime and mystery are super popular, so it's very nice. I don't think we have a lot of true crime readers on our show,
but definitely at our library.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of people feel hesitant to talk about true crime because they're like, oh my goodness, it's kind of a grisly thing
to just like,
be interested
in.
They're just
like, this is me, I enjoy murder.
It's actually a very, very popular subset of nonfiction.
Mm-hmm. So. Definitely.
So I know you are a super avid reader. In fact, I also know that you compete with Katie for like number of books.
Is it competing when someone just clobbers you?
How many books did you read last year?
Last year I read 82, I think.
And was this one of the ones that you read in the past year?
Yes, it was.
Where do you think it stacks compared to the other 80-something?
Percentile.
I would say top 25%.
Okay. Nice. That's pretty good and out of 82.
Do you have a goal for this year?
This year, Okay, so last year it was 52. I'm going to try and do 60.
Okay.
Yeah, and I know I read 80
you're
last
shooting
year.
For 90.
Technically, I should be shooting for 90.
Basically. He was a little worried because some of the books he read were short, and I was just like...
A book.
You've got plenty of time.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for bringing a book that is very different from what we normally feature on here, but that's really good. We like to try to spotlight a wide variety of
books. Want to make sure everyone has at least one episode where they go, oh, this sounds really good.
Yeah, Jim Jones is nothing if not an interesting figure.
Oh. I think the last true crime that we featured was on the Golden Gate Killer.
Oh, that's true.
Not long after we
I think we published the episode and like 3 days later he was caught and we were like,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's crazy how it works out sometimes.
Well, what's his, something D'Angelo, I think his name is?
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah. We didn't know that at the time.
No, we didn't. And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye.